Coming up on Simply Superior. It was the season's first real snow, and it isn't even winter yet. Duluth and Superior took different approaches to plowing out. Did they get to your street?
I am here to acknowledge that we have not fulfilled our commitment on the snowstorm, this time for neighborhoods and residents.
And how well did the officials' messages get out?
Well, I think in Superior we have a more hopeful approach that explains quite logically the path at which the snow removal decisions were made. On the other hand, it was, again, a little mixed message.
In Duluth. Plus, where does it rank in the annals of Northland weather history?
And I even said that on the air. This is the biggest snowfall amount I've ever forecasted.
We borrow a TV chief meteorologist to find out all that snow business after this. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So it's Friday, and last weekend's wallop of a snowstorm has come and gone. The plows got all out, and everything's cleared away, right? Maybe not. And we'll review what did happen and what didn't in the region, including a press conference this week with Duluth Mayor Emily Larson apologizing for not plowing the city's Hillside neighborhood, and our own conversation with Superior Mayor Jim Payne of his city's strategy of focusing on all neighborhoods that left less than completely plowed and pretty slippery, as I can attest, main roads. But first, what about the weather and Mother Nature herself? Exactly where does our early season snowstorm rank in Northland weather history? My guest in the studio to put that in perspective is Adam Clark, the chief meteorologist at KBJR.
That's right.
Thank you. And a resident of Superior. Welcome to Simply Superior.
I'm a resident of Duluth, but yes.
I knew I would get something wrong there.
That's all right.
And I thought I was going to get wrong the part about KBJR because you guys have changed your name.
Yep.
And I used to introduce you as Northland's News. So yeah, can I even say that
anymore? No, you can't. No, that's forbidden. We shan't say the Northland's News Center any longer.
Well, I'm going to say one more time to say that a Northland's News Center veteran happens to be one of our people here at Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yep.
Allison Wade joins us in the studio.
Hello. Hello.
And so we're all just old friends from our various media days and Duluth Superior media history. Superior being where you are not a resident. I'm sorry for that.
But I am. So I can be here to represent the Superior residents.
So instead of talking about ourselves, let's talk about the weather.
Yeah.
Where does this rank, Adam
Ninth.
Clark?
It was the ninth biggest two-day snow total in our history, recorded history at least. So it was a really big one, and as far as my 9 years, it was the biggest. It was the biggest in my total career. I've never seen that much snow.
Ever. Anywhere.
At once. I mean, we did have that one April where we got 56 inches, this was 2 days and 21.7 inches, and I think my highest total was 38 inches, 5 miles west of Washburn. So we had some lake enhancement, lake effect coming right off the lake with that really gusty wind. Had 14 to 16 foot waves.
That was this time, you're saying?
This Washburn time.
Got, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Not county, the city in Bayfield County, just 5 miles west, 38 inches. And several around 36 or 32 inches in that area. So I know that, you know, it's plausible, you know. And we had a lot of snow up on the hill. And the cutoff was right around Grand Marais and just north of Ely, and where they barely got anything, and just down to the south. We knew that there was going to be a huge cutoff, but trying to figure out where that was going to be. Was Ely going to get some, like 1 to 4? They ended up getting 7, but just to the north of Ely, not that much. But it was a big one.
Go ahead, Allison.
Well, I'm curious, Adam, when you were watching the models before the storm actually happened, was there anything, you know, that you looked at and you thought, this is different than what I've seen before?
Oh, it was amazing. It was so cool because all of my models agreed. And they never agree. It's my job to try to figure out which one's telling the truth, right?
Right.
I'm like the judge, and they're like, okay, is this one, you know, is it acting a fool, or am I going to be able to trust it? all of them brought, like, I had two that exactly brought in 16.7 inches. Wow. And then one 19.7, and the other one was wavering around a foot. And I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to get my eye on you. You might be onto something because, you know, I don't want this thing to bust. But it was Thursday, Thanksgiving. I was working. And the forecast, it gave me all those high totals.
And even if they weren't going to be exactly what that was, it told you something big was happening.
Exactly. And what I wanted to tell
people. And you were pretty confident of that because I'm one of those skeptics. I mean, I'm a journalist. And, you know, skepticism is in my blood. And I actually caught living on this planet and realized, okay, there's two possibilities. It'll happen or it won't.
Yep.
And a lot of times it doesn't. And so I listen to you all the time, of course. And, you know, hey, you're a great guy, but you're either going to be right or wrong.
I know.
You can't control
see,
the weather.
I know I've got
But this
skeptics.
Time you knew you were right.
Yeah. And I, well, you never know.
He's still giving a disclaimer.
Yeah. I mean, it's weather and you're in Duluth, so it's going to be a little wacky. But I was like, I can't not tell people about this because all the facts are there. These are the tools that I have to use. They're telling me 16 inches of snow. So I went 12 to 18. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is the biggest snowfall. And I even said that on the air. This is the biggest snowfall amount I've ever forecasted because I'm conservative. I know that I'm conservative in my snow totals. You can ask anybody in town. They'll probably say, yeah, Adam's a little low sometimes on his numbers. But this one, I was like, you know, everything showed it. So I was the first one to make a snowfall map on Thursday. The Weather Service wasn't doing it. None of my competition was doing it. So I was able to make that map, put it on. I've got so many shares and you know, people. And there wasn't that many naysayers. I was waiting for the naysayers. Like, he's just crazy.
Well, on Saturday afternoon is when it started coming out.
Yes.
My wife and I went out to the mall. We said, it isn't too bad. And we just really wanted something to do. And then there was a question of stopping by Dunkin' Donuts on the way back.
Nice.
And I said, maybe not. And then by the time we got home, which was only a few minutes, we said, good idea we didn't.
Yeah. I was trying to show on Thursday night, I had this map where it has 3 points. I had Hibbing, Duluth, and Hayward. It's like equidistant in between each other. And what would happen is these piles of snow would accumulate because I wanted to show by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we were only supposed to get like 1 to 2 inches. I didn't want people to think, oh, this thing's a bust, because it's kind of hard to get all the facts straight because there's so many facts coming at you, like the timing, when will it start? And the models got it right too. Around 2 to 3 o'clock, that's when it had the piling up of the snow occurring. And so I showed the snow pile just growing and growing and growing. And I had to double up. I've never used the 24-inch ruler on that. I went from 12 to 24, and I was like, oh, I got to turn this thing up. So, yeah, that's the way I try to show when it's going to happen and just try to beat it over people's head, like when it's going to happen, how much is going to happen. And my goal is to, if you watch my forecast, you will know the weather. You will know what's going to happen. That's what I try to do.
Well, the motto's got it right, and therefore you got it right.
And
you can sit here and celebrate. But let's put this in historical perspective.
Sure.
But congratulations for getting it right. We're talking to Adam Clark of KBJR, chief meteorologist, joined by his former colleague and my current colleague, Ellison Wade at WPR here. And we're talking about the weather. So this is an early season. It's not winter yet, let's remind people.
Yeah.
Storm. And as I think you know, I travel to the East Coast a lot. I've spent many years in Boston and go there a lot. And everybody says, Minnesota was Wisconsin, and I say, actually, you guys usually get snow before we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sitting in both of it. And
yeah.
So, but this time we kind of matched them.
Yeah.
And there was something that Emily Larson said in her mea culpa press conference, which we will get to in this show, that it is not as bad as a Halloween blizzard of 1991, I believe it was, but more challenging. But Where does it rank in terms of early season? I mean, is this unusual? Am I correct in my perception on that?
No, it's not unusual because in the early season, we've got more moisture in the atmosphere, and that's what you need for a big snowstorm. That's why the Halloween blizzard or a snowstorm is number one. They had 36 inches of snow.
But it's not that common, though. I mean, we're digging, you know, we're going back to 1991.
No, we get about 2 6-inch snowstorms a year on average.
Okay.
So that puts it into perspective. So we got 21 inches. So we usually get at least 6 inches plus snowstorms. But so that answers
and,
that.
And what part of the season, though, is that, that's what I'm saying.
Season?
Right.
Usually they happen in the early season or late season because in the middle of January and into February, the atmosphere is very dry.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't hold as much moisture. So we get the white fluffy snow and then it just really doesn't get like huge snowstorms like we would in the early season.
I remember actually when Adam flew to Duluth to interview for the position that he has had at
from balmy South Carolina or something like that?
No, Oregon.
At that time he was in Oregon. And I was showing him around, you know, the station and around Canal Park. And it was during that time of year when it was really dry and
very
cold. We were in a, you know, stretch of like below zero temps. And I said to Adam, we get excited when it warms up enough to snow around here.
Yeah.
And he told me later he remembered that when he went home and thought long and hard before he took the job.
I think only a weatherman would come and interview for a job in January in Duluth, Superior.
Well, he was so excited.
Oh, yeah.
I
love snow. The job description was be a chief meteorologist in a winter wonderland, small market.
Figure out where that is, yes.
Pretty accurate.
Yeah, got it. But usually your big storms happen earlier in the season and then later in the season because there's more moisture, there's more warmth in the atmosphere.
But maybe the first big storm goes away or something? Does it melt or something?
Yeah,
is that
usually,
why it doesn't register with me as really meaning much? Yeah.
Yeah. Usually we do have a melting period. It will get warmer and lose some of that snow. But it just doesn't happen that often. Like I was looking at records of like big snowstorms. I mean, we had a good many in 2013, 2014, over 6 inches. But for the most part, there was one year we barely had any. So
my perception is correct.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's about time you said I was right. Yes. What do you think I brought you here for?
You are right in everything, Robin.
You know, you're the chief meteorologist, but I'm the host. I mean, come on, let's get this straight. So the question other people other than me want to know, I'm sure, is will this last? Is this the stuff we're going to be dealing with hard as a rock, looking like the the moonscape in March, April, and hopefully not beyond that? Or should it go away? Give us one of your great predictions, please.
Oh, my gosh.
Says it goes away.
You see, anything past about 7 days is pretty much magic. So generally, we don't have an El Niño or a La Niña right now. Nothing's really prevalent. So there's nothing really telling me exactly what it's going to be like for the rest of the winter. What we have seen lately, though, is that the jet stream has been getting stuck more often, allowing for cold Arctic air to stay put for a long period of time. Whereas before, it would move along. It wouldn't stay around for all that long, you know. It wouldn't be sitting over the region for a long period of time. In fact, our area, the upper Midwest, has been colder than average for the past couple of years, whereas the rest of the world is way warmer than average. So we are the anomaly of the world.
and you didn't say the words climate change, but that's where we were going.
Yeah,
And that was my next question. You answered it. Where does it rank in terms of the whole climate change thing? And I think the big fallacy many people have is, well, today it wasn't what they said it would be, or it's cold. How could it be global warming and all? But
that's weather.
Again,
yeah, it's different.
That again. So you're saying that the rest of the world is doing what?
The rest of the world is seeing a temperature increase, whereas for the past year and a half to 2 years here in the upper Midwest, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, we've been a little bit colder than average. So I have people talking to me about that all the time. They say, Adam, it's been cold. We've been colder than average. And what's the deal? Why are you still talking about climate change? And I was like, well, you have to think about the whole world. The whole world is seeing warmer than average temperatures. And in fact, we've had a decrease of 35% days with less than a foot of snow and a 60% decrease for no snow on the ground. So we've had more days with less snow on the ground than before, and also a foot of snow has decreased by 35%.
So I'm going to take that as a long way around to answering my question of will this stay?
usually it will melt, and we will see a little bit of a warm period that will melt it.
I'm curious, because it seems like this year fall temperatures came on quite early, and now the snow season seems to have come on quite early. Does that mean that spring's going to come early too? That would
I wasn't asking for spring.
That's what
right
I
now.
Would like.
We probably have to have winter.
I know it's a little premature, but I just need a little light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, with climate change, spring does come earlier and earlier. And winter later and later. The shrinking of winter for Minnesota and Wisconsin is occurring, and then that's something that we can foresee in the future.
I don't remember that last year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a long-term trend.
All right.
Yeah. You got to think the long run.
Not always.
You're listening to the weatherman who, when the thing doesn't quite go the way that he said, it's a long-term trend. Well, I appreciate you coming in on this short-term trim. Anything else we should be anticipating?
A big-time cool down. Today, Friday, is pretty chilly. We're going to see a warm-up for this weekend, but then a big-time drop in the temperature. Got a chance of some snow on Monday, but it looks like the system's going to stay to our south. But one thing I'm pretty certain about, we're highs in the single digits Monday and Tuesday, so it's going to be a pretty chilly start to the week, a very Arctic blast coming in next week.
Well, I think you just heard the first Simply Superior weather forecast.
There you go.
With our new chief meteorologist.
All right.
Since we've been stealing people from KBJR and bringing them over here, principally Allison Wade, who has joined us in the studio. Thank you, Allison.
Yeah, thank you.
And, of course, Adam Clark, the chief meteorologist for KBJR.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, Duluth and Superior employ different approaches for tackling the snow. We'll discuss what worked and what didn't. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So how well were you shoveled out of the early season blizzard this week? In Duluth, former city councilor Howie Hansen stirred up some Facebook excitement about the age-old inequities in the city, suggesting that East Duluth was better plowed than West. The city responded by saying the plowing is equally distributed, with teams deployed in both areas. Hansen did not respond to our request to better explain his postings. Yet there was one area of the city that was substantially missed, the Central and East Hillside neighborhoods, resulting in an extra day's closure of two schools that disproportionately affect low-income families. On Wednesday morning, Duluth Mayor Emily Larson held a press conference to apologize for the failures. Here are her remarks.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. I really appreciate it. I am here to acknowledge that we have not fulfilled our commitment on the snowstorm this time for neighborhoods and residents. And I was raised that you step into shortcomings and you own them, and you let people know that you will strive to do better. There are several things that we are learning that we need to improve on. I think in the past we have been able to get from snowstorm to snowstorm and adequately meet residents' needs. In this case, we had several things that made that very complicated for us. And I can explain some of that, and I can talk about some of what we'll be doing differently moving forward. And I also know that at the end of the day, sometimes the frustration is just the frustration. And so I don't expect the details of what has made this complicated to necessarily be a balm that soothes families that are being significantly inconvenienced. But the combination of a holiday weekend, of machinery that was really strained and stressed, that was functioning and then broke several times with the weight of the snow, with the compaction of the snow, the degree of blowing and drifting. This was a very different snowstorm than the ones that I have experienced in the last 4 years. And while we are a climate that is used to experiencing snowfalls in extreme weather, the combination of things made this really difficult. And so I do want to acknowledge how hard that is for our residents. I do want to thank our residents that have been very clear about where you need us to show up and giving us the information to do that. I want to thank residents who time and again showed up for one another. I live in the Hillside neighborhood. A plow got to my house at 5 p.m. yesterday, and between the time snowfall ended on Sunday and Tuesday at 5 p.m., there was really an outpouring of neighbor support, helping people get through the day and get to where they needed to be. I also want to acknowledge that there is a major gap in what we were able to accomplish before this morning, and that was the East and Central Hillside neighborhoods. And because of that, Superintendent Gronseth had to make a decision to not have school at Lowell and Myers-Wilkins. I have acknowledged that with Superintendent, who is here, and apologized on behalf of our staff for not meeting that important need. And I need you to know that that is actually in stark contrast to our values as an organization. We have striven time and time again to show up equitably and fairly across the city, especially in neighborhoods that need us to show up in really big ways. That includes, for me, the neighborhoods of the East and Central Hillside, of which I am also a resident. So just want to acknowledge that. I also want to say that we did do a lot of things very right, and we will talk about that as a staff internally too, but today is really to acknowledge our shortcomings this time, to let our community know that we will do better, we will strive to do better. Here is some of how we are going to do that. We are looking, and we have heard from residents very clearly that part of the frustration is not knowing when that plow is coming to your house. So we do know that there is some technology and some capacity we can look at that would provide more real time, a sense of more real time plowing. And I think our residents would really appreciate that. That would also be an additional checks and balance to us, because there are always ways that we may miss a street or an intersection. Because our staff and team is working so hard to cover so much ground. We'll be looking at how we are staffing and how we are communicating both internally and externally. Again, I think we did some things really well about that, and I think we have identified ways that we can really improve. I want to thank our staff and our team who have worked very hard. One of the things I enjoy about the work of mayor in this community is that we are deeply connected with all of you. You do call us and you do message us and email us and let us know where you see we can improve. And I really want to thank our staff and team who have been on the front line of those phone calls and emails this week, partnering with you to hear your frustration and working to be a better responder the next time or with your next call. I also want to acknowledge, we did have some very specific questions from people about mutual aid or when would we, you know, work with the state of Minnesota or the county or the city of Superior. And I want to say that in this case, that really was not an option because every other entity was really working on their own snow removal. And so we do have conversations going with other entities. We are in conversation about what mutual aid could look like when another municipality or county or region is not responding to their own snow events. And I do want to thank the governor's office, who did reach out, and we did have a conversation as well. At some point, a municipality really needs to be the one who knows their streets and get the turnaround going and get people plowed out in time to keep up on the important work of your life. So just want to acknowledge that we will strive to do better. We have strategies by which we think we can do that, and to acknowledge for the community that this was not the kind of response we'd like to provide to all of you. I do believe that this is a complicated snowfall. It was going to take us a few days, but this last day has really, I think, proven to be too long for everybody. I also want to thank our community partners. You're going to hear from Jess Peterson, who is our manager of Parks and Recreation. We do have activities that we are providing in partnership with community resources for families today. I understand and recognize as a parent how important it is that our kids are learning, that they're engaged in what it means to be home from school and home from work. And the economic impact that has, the learning impact that has, the family impact that has. So I do want to give Jess, you a chance to say a few words about the programming that is available. And then Kate is going to talk a little bit about the communications, what we're doing today and tomorrow, and what we need from the public to make sure that we are getting to all the nooks and crannies. Jess?
Thank you, Mayor Larson, and thank you all for being here this morning. So Parks and Rec has been working with our community partners to activate some additional programming, specifically in the Central and East Hillside, to ensure that our kids and families have a safe place, a fun place to enjoy today, and also have access to food options. So this morning from 9 to 11, Parks and Rec will still be providing their regular weekly play gym activities at the Washington Center. And that program is specific for our preschool families, and it's free of charge today. The Washington Center will then switch gears from noon to 6 p.m. with our community partner Neighborhood Youth Services, which will be serving families both lunch and supper, and in between provide recreational programming. They will be supported by Parks and Rec staff today as well. In addition, the Harbor Highlands YMCA site and Grant Rec will be activated for programming starting at 9 a.m. this morning and run through about 5 p.m. this afternoon. These are free drop-in sites and will be staffed by Y staff and will again be supported by Parks and Recreation staff providing recreational programming today. Both of the phone numbers for those can be found in a future press release or on their websites for Neighborhood Youth Services and the Duluth Y. Thanks.
We do have one more site, too, that is open. The downtown YMCA branch is open and can accommodate about 25 families or kids. And so that is also available. Really want to thank NYS, Princess Kassab, who is the director there, and Sarah Cole, who is the executive director with the Duluth Y. Both stepped up brilliantly when we really, really needed them to help make sure that families had a free place to support their kids and families with food today. Kate?
So as Mayor Larson mentioned, there's some gaps that we're dealing with. And so again, the public has been wonderful in helping us to understand where plows are and where they have not been. It is our ask to the public that if your street, if your alley hasn't yet been plowed, please let us know that. We have tripled our efforts, have added staff to our triage line, which is 730-5100 that people can call, let us know, we will add you into our database and then be able to work with our team to help help provide those services where they're needed. Another opportunity to let us know is by going to our website, which is duluthmn.gov/snow. There's a form on there that residents can go to again let us know where you're located, where you haven't seen a plow yet. And again, we will do everything within our power to make sure that that is corrected. With that, I'd like to open up for any questions that you may have.
How do you decide what gets plowed first? Because there's been some discussion that there were some less affluent neighborhoods that were plowed last, and just how you go about.
Thanks for this question. This is actually one of the things that I find most dispiriting, is that the last neighborhood that we got to was the Hillside neighborhood. And I think can give an impression that we are prioritizing based on anything other than where our workload is and how we disseminate people. We have two bases by which we send people out, east and west. By mileage, we actually have more staff and machines working west than east. And then, you know, of course, we work with the DTA, we work with the school district. We try to be a good steward of safe routes to schools and main roads and emergency services. I think for the most part, we did a really good job of meeting a lot of those expectations. And I think people were with us that first, you know, 30 hours understanding, and then the huge amount of work that remained in the neighborhoods meant that we just missed areas. And that's really just what that gets to. We had a system in place that just did not get done and did not get executed.
Speaking of priorities, why wasn't Myers Wilkins area, which is a school, given priority, especially when 80% of those students live in poverty?
Yep. Yep, you are right to be angry about that. That is my neighborhood school as well, and it's where my kids went to school. So I can tell you that I have been very clear about what my expectations are on how we do snow clearing, and that did not meet the expectations that I have in place for us as a city. Again, I think it's a series of things that just didn't happen and internal structures that did not merit getting that area done. It's really on us that we didn't get that area done, and that's not in keeping with the values that I have presented as a community and what our residents can expect to rely on with me.
I know you briefly talked about an online system.
Yep.
You might be considering in the future. We personally have been getting phone calls from community members about really putting an online system where they can keep track of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so a couple of things. So I think, as many of you know, we just did these 10 City Hall in the City events, public events, where we talked about street work and we talked about snow removal, because we know that we will need new systems and a different system of snow removal moving forward. We thought we had this whole year to kind of get the city on board, put signage out, and get to a new system. I think we have to start doing some of those pieces early and sooner. Some of that is likely to include some kind of system like what you're talking about. So we were already discussing that before the snowfall happened, and now I can see how useful that would be for people. It's clear to me that part of what I have committed is a transparency and a commitment to communication, and there are tools that we can utilize that I think residents would really appreciate, would be able to understand, would be able to see and give us real-time feedback on if we've missed something, and they can see if it just somehow didn't get to that nook and cranny there. So yes, we are looking into that. There will be a cost to that, but it's clear to me that there's a cost to not having that. And it would be helpful for all of us, media partners, residents, school district, everybody, to have a better visual of where we've been and when they can expect us to show up at their door. Oh, Peter, I want to get Peter.
This is an issue of managing the resources versus mm-hmm. having adequate.
Yeah.
To deal with a storm of this magnitude.
Yeah, I think it's actually a combination, to tell you the truth. I could tell you that if we had more trucks and more staff, we would have used them in this case. There's no doubt in my mind. I know that we were fully deployed, that at any given time when we were at, you know, a full work shift, we had 40 machines out on the road and we had 40 people working those machines. So, you know, that is actually a pretty robust response. I also know that, you know, if we had 80 machines, we would have used them and 80 staff staffing those machines. The question isn't what we need in that moment of that emergency. The question is, how do you staff that year round, and or how do you engage in some kind of, you know, contractual arrangement or mutual aid arrangement? And in this case, mutual aid was not an option because of snow emergencies already happening, you know, in those other areas.
The question I also have about is this snow emergency, you know, we recognized earlier this year that we had a snow emergency system that just is broken.
That's right.
And that, you know, it was going to take probably 2 years to kind of figure out how to get that up and working the way we'd like to see it running. Is there any thought about it, that process needing to accelerate in light of this experience with this latest event?
Yeah, I'll let CAO Noah Schuckman talk about that a little bit, but you're exactly right. We knew that we were concerned about the capacity when it comes to a snow emergency like this. There's just a lot of cars, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of roads, and we're a regional center. So we have a lot more activation than just the residents that are here. But Noah, would you like to speak
sure.
to that a little bit?
Thank you for the question, Peter. I think the biggest challenge we were run into right now, if we implemented the snow emergency rule that we passed last month, would be that there are no signs up. And so people would not be able to know whether or not they were on a snow emergency route, which would make it more complicated. And that's frankly why we didn't implement it this year, is that we ran out of time in the summer to get the signs installed. And our goal would be to make sure that people have the information they need so that they move their vehicle if and when appropriate.
So part of what we're going to do internally is have an after action, we would call it, you know, which is something, you know, a debrief after an incident of some kind. So we will be doing that with this, because I think if there are things we can do in the short term, we need to do them. We need to, you know, evaluate our systems. We need to look at the technology. We need to incorporate new ideas to meet what those staffing gaps may be at those critical times. So yes, we will look at all of that. And just acknowledge again that we will strive to do much better. And thank our residents, because I know that you are the ones at the end of the day that we do this work for, that we think about, that we stay up all night or half the night worried about. This is work we take very personally and very seriously. And your safety and your ability to get around and operate and live your life is really, really important to me and our entire team. So thank you for being here today.
We just heard the Wednesday press conference of Duluth Mayor Emily Larson apologizing for leaving the central portions of the city substantially unplowed following last weekend's early season blizzard. Coming up, Superior takes a different approach. Welcome back to Simply Superior. We just heard the Wednesday press conference of Duluth Mayor Emily Larson apologizing for leaving the central portions of the city substantially unplowed following last weekend's early season blizzard. On the other side of the bay, Superior took a different approach to digging out. On Wednesday night, I checked in with Mayor Jim Payne, who had been giving day-by-day updates on the plowing progress on social media. Here's our conversation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So I've been following your post. Overall, what's your assessment? How did it go from what you thought you were going to have and what you ended up with, or we ended up with?
Well, that's the biggest assessment. Everything exceeded our expectations. It was just everything was bigger and more challenging than we thought, and we kept having to adjust our expectations day by day. You're asking me now, when we have pretty much every city street clear, when we've got our mains cleared pretty much down to the pavement, almost everybody's out, and we're starting to turn back for a second pass in residential. So feeling pretty good this afternoon, but it's been a long week.
And we're talking, by the way, on Wednesday. People are listening on Friday.
Yeah.
So Wednesday afternoon. And one thing I noticed was we had something this afternoon called sun.
Yeah, and warm temperatures, which really helped.
Okay, but I point that out because I know that the scraping, you just mentioned it, getting to the pavement seemed to be a problem.
Yeah, and that was something of a policy decision that we made down at the city garage. I don't know who actually suggested that. We did not fully clear our main routes during the aftermath of the storm. We got them passable, and then we put all of our equipment into residential, with a goal of clearing out every single property. Mm-hmm. And then we even turned to alleys before we turned back to those mains last night. So we did have some complaints about some of our main roads being pretty rough yesterday. Mm-hmm. But because we waited, we were able to get everybody out of their home by yesterday evening.
So that works by having like a single pass, or maybe not a single, but a couple passes, and then going on to where you're going to go, as opposed to whatever number of passes you need to get it actually down to the pavement?
Exactly. It was a decision we needed to serve everybody. And if we didn't serve everybody well, that's just something we had to accept. We needed to make sure everybody got some service. To us, that was equitable treatment. And it was a recognition that an emergency can happen anywhere. Everybody that lives in this city has things that they need to get out and do, whether it's go to work or go to doctor appointments, bring kids to school. We had to get to everybody. And if it meant one more rough day of travel, at least it would be a day of travel.
I get it. And you know, it's amazing how we all learn the science of these things when they happen, because I never thought of that. Obviously, I know that they have to go through more than once, but you know, I don't know what the minimum number of time or the time it takes to get to the pavement. But I see that. You it's only so much resources, and you could keep doing the same road, or you could go on and get other people. Equity is the issue in Duluth. Your counterpart had a whole press conference pretty much giving a mea culpa, because in the end it wasn't quite equitable. The Central Hillside and East Hillside apparently were still are in some cases.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You didn't have to give such a press conference.
Well, I mean, it was important to us to communicate as often as possible, let people know the plan. I am not in a position to criticize Duluth in any way.
No, actually, and it wasn't meant to be a criticism. It's
your
decision, which you just said, you got some flack for that because people were complaining. And I was out on the roads and was on Tower Avenue and said, all right, we're taking it slow.
For sure.
But that was one way of addressing the other issue, which you would have gotten flack for. So.
Right. And again, you know, I recognize that people are going to be upset if it's not a perfect drive, and it'll be hard to understand if they're driving down a really rough Hammond Avenue or a really rough Tower Avenue back to their house that's already been cleared. But from our perspective, we were thinking about those people whose home has not been cleared. They don't care that Tower Avenue is not perfect. They want their street cleared. And so that's what we did. And obviously, this took a long time, and there are plenty of lessons to be learned for future large storms. I'm pretty confident about our snow clearing plan for most storms. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that plan served this event. Our overall philosophy is to clear enough main routes that everybody in the city is within a few blocks of a cleared street. Now, that was true pretty quickly after the storm here. The problem was traveling those couple of blocks was nearly impossible. And so that's the part of the plan that we have to try and find a new system for going forward.
Mm-hmm. There was some discussion at the Duluth press conference about mutual aid, and we always think of that in terms of fire, but that makes sense in case of fire, because unless you have the fires of 1918, not everybody's on fire at the same time. And so you could take a truck from Hibbing, you can take a truck from Washburn, and they all can go to Superior, Duluth, or wherever they're going. But you get socked with the same snow. I mean, the storm doesn't just hit one side of the bay necessarily.
Right, exactly. And we've had cause to use that mutual aid agreement for public safety plenty of times, including the refinery fire, but you're right. However, snow experiences are different, sometimes even between the municipalities. We had a storm last year that affected parts of Duluth and Superior very, very differently. It was almost like four different storms. But there's also the way different governmental and private organizations clear their snow that can make mutual aid a viable option. So, for example, I've been communicating with Douglas County, and we're pretty close to a verbal deal that we'll hammer out where they will come in and assist us during some heavy storms. They will take over our largest main routes, namely our state highways that run through, and that will free up a lot of our equipment to clear even more routes within residential neighborhoods.
And I'm not saying that mutual aid wouldn't apply to weather conditions. You're absolutely right. I mean, every one of us has been up on the hill in Duluth, and it was a beautiful day. You came down the shore, and whoa, what's going on? Or you were in Superior, it was great, and whatever. We've had those experiences.
Sure.
But this was not one of them. This was everybody
getting
sucked.
Yeah. This was an experience where there was no aid out there. Everybody was clearing snow. Absolutely everybody that had heavy equipment and knew how to use it was using it to clear snow. Now, but that's another part of this story. Everybody helped. Everybody was part of this cleanup effort, from kids with shovels to people that owned heavy construction equipment. They were all deploying that in this effort. Now, not all of it was expert help, not all of it was coordinated, but there was a strong sense of community and neighbors helping neighbors. And that's one of the real silver linings in this. It really showed a community coming together.
All right. One more thing is, boy, I said this last week. We had a conversation about Park Point erosion, and I love quoting the line that we're having the 500-year storm every 5 years, right?
So, yes.
I want to ask if we have enough equipment, but it's supposed to be 500-year storm stuff, but then maybe it's happening every 5 years. So do we have enough? Yeah.
What a valid question. One of the when we dig into the science of climate change, one of the concerns for winter cities is climate change drives more precipitation. It leads to more moisture in the atmosphere, and in a winter city, that's more snow. And so the Superior of the 20s may not be the Superior of the late 20th century. And we are going to have to adapt to that. We are going to have to make climate resiliency a part of our future planning. And the fact is, the future has begun. It's right now. The climate crisis has hit Superior. This is what it looks like.
Mayor Jim Payne, thank you for joining us.
Good night, Robin. Thank you.
That was Superior Mayor Jim Payne giving a midweek report Wednesday night about his city's strategy of digging out from the blizzard. I'm joined now in the studio by Elisa Von Hagel, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Thanks for being here. So we have two different approaches. I'm not going to ask you about the plowing, although I'm sure we're all experts here.
Yeah. Right? Seems like everyone is after a big storm.
We learned a lot from experience. But what do you think about the approaches of the two mayors and their communications?
It's interesting that they both took such divergent approaches. And so with Superior, you have the, you know, just clear the one time through the main arteries and then open up all the residential and alleyways, equity route, you would call it, I suppose, versus
right.
In Duluth, they really focused on keeping those main arteries clear before moving to some of the other residential neighborhoods. And then clearly we know that there, as of or on Wednesday, there were still some neighborhood residential streets that had not been plowed. And one would assume also alleyways. And so, again,
in the mayor's neighborhood, no less.
Yes. And yes, in her neighborhood as well. So, and so because of that, obviously, there was two schools that were still closed on Wednesday. So they had quite a long Thanksgiving holiday break for sure. You know, both approaches are very unique and different. And, you know, I guess I'm not one to judge why or, you know, which one is better or worse. But I think that as the mayor in Superior had stated, that the effort was to ensure that the main arteries were cleared at least enough so that plows could move on to the residential neighborhoods. And even if the driving was rough on Tower, Hammond, at least.
Right. I was driving on Tower and slipping all over the place, although I do have some four-wheel drive.
Yes.
But, you know, he said, yeah, well, at least you got the Tower. So.
Correct. Correct. And so, I mean, there's, you know, again, there's still some issues with that in terms of, you know, whether or not that compounded the clear up with if there were more accidents or if that hindered emergency vehicles. It's hard. I mean, I'm not, you know, that's something I think.
I think was minor enough and everybody was aware, you know, that you didn't do much. In Duluth, the added effects, of course, were in the poorer neighborhood, regardless if it is the mayor's neighborhood. And the closing of Myers-Wilkins and Lowell schools is not a small thing because these are children largely in poverty who, you know, having them stay home a day means parents staying home, means all kinds of stuff that have a trickle-down effect.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this has, I mean, a huge effect. I mean, I have a son myself, and when the schools close, it's crisis mode. And so for all of those families that have to have one more day of, you know, either figure out or either just not go into work and lose that day's pay or cobble together some alternative to ensure that their children are being watched or, you know, taken care of throughout the day. I mean, it is very significant. It's a huge stressor on individuals' lives and also on families that compounds the already impoverished circumstances that many families in these neighborhoods are already living under, which, you know, is certainly something that we would obviously not want to contribute to and would be very significant to address.
Right. So given that, I can certainly understand why she felt the need to give an apology. But what do you think of the apology? And we don't have to be overly critical here, but A, it's unusual. I mean, mayors have snowstorms all the time. And yes, stuff goes wrong. But she used the word acknowledged, boy, I don't know how many times. And I'll go this far, and then you could give your opinion, and we'll cut off on mine. But I noticed that she would say, we're sorry, this shouldn't have happened, and then she would thank her staff. And I think there was a mixed message there.
It was. I think you're spot on there with the mixed messaging, that it was, you know, trying to be forthright and, you know, Minnesotan and, you know, acknowledge our shortcomings. But then right away, yeah, turning to this is our plan for the next big storm, and then I acknowledge your frustration. I acknowledge, you know, all of the problems that has been caused. But then I want to thank all of the staff and everyone, you know. And so it was a very back and forth. It wasn't a very clear line of
wasn't binary.
No. And I think that, again, the acknowledging of the shortcomings is something that is, it's an interesting turn of phrase, I suppose. But I think that there may be many people out there, especially those who were with streets or alleyways that have not been plowed to the latest days, that having someone say that they acknowledge their shortcomings, I think
feel
is,
your pain.
That's not, you know, I mean, we all know that these are, again, huge storms. You
right.
can't plan. There's things that happen and nobody can foresee all of the events that would come forward and prevent them in any way. But at the same time, there wasn't a very clear, articulate message stating that our path, the way that we chose to deal with this storm, is wrong or was wrong.
And it didn't come up until a reporter's question that the snow emergency hadn't been called. And so I'm going to give you a bit of analysis that I've been thinking about, which is the east and west Duluth. There's, you know, always a dichotomy and obviously the economic differences historically. And she points out they have two divisions for snow plowing, east and west, they're equal. Again, the hillside was the one that got stiffed. But still, by driving on the roads, I know, I can tell you the main arteries east, Superior Street, were pretty plowed. You know, this is anecdotal. But what's not anecdotal is there is more off-street parking in East Duluth than there is on the hillside and in West Duluth. And that's a legacy from economics and earlier planning or whatever we're stuck with from previous generations. How do you address that, or, you know, what? I guess the first thing is get your cars off the street, but then what?
Well, and I think, again, the question is, well, you know, for many people, perhaps anywhere in the city, the question first is, you know, where are people supposed to park if they do not have parking in their, you know, in a garage, in a residence, in a driveway? I mean, where else are they supposed to place their cars? Like, there's no sites or places, convenience that would be amenable to hopefully prevent that type of situation. And so, again, with areas that have so much off-street parking, that, again, is a legacy of, you know, historical, structural and institutional poverty or what have you.
Inequity,
yeah. Yes. That it just simply, you know, again, there's really no option. There's no clear option. I don't think there's any good answer as to, like, first of all, where these cars are supposed to be moving off to, and then if the cars are to be somewhere transported offsite to some location.
The parking ramps downtown or something?
Right, which is...
Well, I mean, seriously, it's the city could open, I don't know, you know, but maybe that's the realism that has to be faced.
Right, and I think that, again, people need to seriously consider and think about and really address, you know, these larger root inequities when dealing with any major issue, whether it's snow removal or what have you.
So a final assessment of the two approaches by the two cities. What do you think?
Well, I think in Superior we have a more approach that attempts to obviously apologize for any inconveniences, but yet explains quite logically the path at which the snow removal decisions were made. On the other hand, it was, again, a little mixed message. And
In Duluth,
there was no addressing the fact that these low-income neighborhoods, you know, what will happen in the future? Will there be any attempts to rethink or reconsider how snow removal is performed in the coming years? I think there was a lot of things left unsaid and a lot of things that were a little unclear after that message from the mayor of Duluth.
All right. Well, let's see what the next one brings. And hopefully there won't be a next one anytime soon, right?
Hopefully soon.
Great. Elisa von Hagel, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you on a more cheerful note with a familiar cover by Allison Adams Tucker.